Happy today to have joining us in studio for a visit and an update on all these important things, State Senator Bill Dodd. Welcome into the show.
Good morning, Barry.
Great to have you here and live and in person, a chance to talk about everything. And top of the mind, of course, is obviously this current fire danger and condition, the PG&E plan for these very expanded shutoffs potentially. What are your thoughts on it right now?
Well, of course, you know, this is something that we knew was going to happen. It was a part of the, 901 legislation a year ago that passed. And, you know, frankly, under my watch on that one, we had seen what San Diego Gas and Electric had done. They had the major fire in 2007, and they initiated these PSPSs back then on their own. They got permission from the CPUC to do it. Now, of course, from that time on, they were rigorously trimming trees and doing the things that they're supposed to do, required by law, by statute. And they have not, it has been like, they had 18 power shutoffs, I think it was, in the first like 5 years, and they have not had very many since then. So that does bode well that that program can work, but it's got to, we have to, in one sense, rely on PG&E. I'll talk a little bit, in a minute on why I ran a bill that didn't trust their reliance and that we needed to put something in a statute to make sure that they do this better job trimming their trees. While this is a precaution that I think is something that will save lives ultimately and save lots and lots of property, we cannot afford to have another the North Bay fires of 2 years ago. We can't have afford to do another camp fire up in Butte County from last year. It's got to be something where the utility does the job they're supposed to do. And this should not be the norm going into our future. That's, I guess, the message. There is hope out there. Why don't I just go into that bill?
Do you want me to? Please do.
So I ran this bill, SB 209. Excuse me, this one was SB 247. There's a lot of different numbers out there. And essentially what we've been doing is, this is the way the CPUC has been running trimming of trees in utility areas statewide. The utility comes in and determines what trees need to be trimmed. They bring it to the CPUC. And they say something like, "Are you sure?" I don't know what they do, but they don't go out there and look at it. Mm-hmm. But they make some recommendations and say, "Okay, you go out and do the work." So the utility, in our case here, PG&E, does the work, or their subcontractor does the work. And guess what? When it's all over, they self-certify that they've done the work. Now, I don't know. When I found that out, was just amazed. And so we put together this bill that we will have boots on the ground. We have in the CPUC a safety unit as a result of this bill. It'll start January 1st. They'll submit their proposals. They'll be approved by the CPUC. They'll do the work. And a safety unit of people that are experts in tree trimming, energy, and the like will be boots on the ground going out and doing these audits. So I expect it to get much better.
Mm-hmm. And that bill was signed by the governor?
It was. Last week, there was four of my wildfire bills that were signed by the governor. He invited me up there. It was kind of he runs a good show.
That was SB 247. As you mentioned, there were a total of four bills. There's another here, 167, had to do with one of the issues that we always talk about, people who have medical needs, need support in their homes and so on. Talk about that one a little bit.
Right. We wanted to make sure that the medically fragile wasn't left behind on these PSPS programs. And then also, it was even more expansive than just that part of it. But, the last thing we want to do is to have a program that will save lives, save property, but then the unintended consequence of that, somebody got killed or hurt very badly because they didn't have the power they needed in their home to run their dialysis machine or ventilator or any number of things. So I was really pleased as this passed, but this bill was even more expansive. This got more of the headlines because it's very important in that regard. But also another element is to work closely with cities and counties on their needs, because the state, or you know, in this case, it's not even the state, a utility, them flicking off switches does you know, things to cities and counties that make them scratch their head. What are we going to do? I was on the phone with Supervisor Pedroza last night talking to me about this, and you know, I believe they're going to declare a state of emergency, and I don't blame them. I think this is something like, wow, they've got to do that in order to be ready. They have no idea. You know, and one other thing this bill does is San Diego Gas and Electric has their own standards of when they shut off protocols. LA Department of Water and Power has theirs, and PG&E has yet another one. And I just think they all ought to be standardized, because, you know, if winds are X, or they should give us the recipe and allow us to go to experts and determine what those are. But they ought to be uniform so people can validate. We get an opportunity to say, hey, PG&E, we think you covered your tail on this one. The winds were nowhere near the level of what you prescribe in your power shutdown criteria. The humidities weren't that low, or together they weren't that low, because we just can't have, you know, we all understand what happened 2 years ago. You know, here in Napa County, both those fires were caused by negligence of PG&E. You know, they'll fight that in court, I'm positive. But nevertheless, that's what Cal Fire found. And so had they done their tree trimming all along and had a culture of safety in their boardroom and their executive suites, I really think that much of this could have been, you know, avoided. But moving on to the future, we're going to get uniform standards of these PSPS and not just leave it to the utility just to widespread shotgun Northern California and say, we're shutting off your power because our liability is too high.
Exactly. And that is my next angle on this. If you've just been on the hook, just been put on the hook for these billions of dollars in liabilities, you are going to err on the side of caution. You're going to turn everything off and then sort it out later. But the problem then becomes, if you're heavy-handed on it, I was talking about this earlier, we're in the middle of harvest. Huh. You know, the valley is full of people are here for that reason, and beyond tourism, it's the industry itself. Can you imagine, you know, if you're in fermentation and you have no power for 3 or 4 days and you can't, you know,
it's
manage.
It's devastating.
Right? So you're looking at a whole new set of consequences and possible claims and liabilities again, right, at a different level.
Yeah, and, you know, PG&E just says they're not liable for any of those costs or expenses. I just find that very, very hard to believe. I also find it very hard to believe that the insurance companies will not cover these costs. And they're saying the insurance industry in general is saying that these are foreseen events. Hmm. Well, I, you know, call BS on that. Hmm. I'm sorry. These are not foreseen. You don't have any idea when they're coming. Up until 2 years ago, we, you know, this wasn't even in our lexicon. And the idea of a winery, for example, and we've got many, many, 400 of them or so in Napa Valley or more. You know, first of all, there's not the supply of generators for everybody to do anything, for everybody to do something. And then if you can believe this, on top of it, you have to get a Bay Area Air Quality Management District permit. And I've had to help get some people some help you know, on that to get their permits where they've been in since April. And so we don't have the capacity, it appears, to even be able to do the back end stuff that we need on generators. It should be noted, I think, that there are some solar generator options that are coming up, which would be good for clean air standards and everything. But also some ideas of microgrids. Mayor Canning and the team up in Calistoga, I talked to Chris yesterday, and they're set. If their town is shut down, they've got microgrids that are going to apparently you know, be able to run the grocery store and some of the tourist places. I'm not, fully detailed, have the detail on all that. But
a generator-based microgrid?
Yeah. And so, they had a hard time last year.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine you have customers in your hotels, you've got people in your shops, and PG&E last time around did a great job. Like right now, they're notifying everybody. They want everybody to know. We want to be prepared. Folks out there, work with your kids on this one. This could be a good learning. I mean, take the good with the bad. This could be a good learning experience. Let's get a to-go bag. Let's understand what needs to be done in these situations, where the escape routes are in your house, and how you would get out if you're in a rural area and actually, are evacuated. But,
looking at what happened last year, that one short-term shutdown in Calistoga.
Oh, that was.
Right? And, just imagining if you're a small business and you're looking at losing, $5,000 in a day, between lost business and inventory, spoilage of food, things like that. There aren't a lot of, a lot of small businesses can't handle losing $5,000 a day for two or three days in a row.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You bailed me out, Barry, because I forgot what my thought pattern was there. But I was talking about PG&E did a great job on the front end, horrible job on the back end. Mm-hmm. Nobody was in Calistoga. None of their representatives or anything to talk to the mayor, to talk to the police chief, fire chief. When are we going to get our power back? And it was unacceptably too long. But unbelievably, what they didn't tell the public afterwards is the next day there were 23 power lines on the ground.
Wow.
And that never came out in the media.
So it was a fully justified shutdown.
It was a fully justified shutdown. And like PG&E, it can be, I get people that are critical of me for being critical of them. I was pretty even at the beginning because I was just focused on, let's recover, let's do things. There'll be a time where PG&E is going to have their lawsuits and the Cal Fire will make these determinations. But I've just seen too many times where they have just, played it loose, played it fast, mm-hmm. and haven't done the right thing. So, and that was one of them. It was really disappointing. That they didn't even, for their own good, put a press release out about these 23 mm-hmm. lines that went. That would make people say, wow, okay.
Absolutely.
Maybe these things are. Mm-hmm. But when it just comes and you leave all these businesses in the lurch, people's wineries wine is in the fermenter. And then forget the wineries for a second and the hotels and everything. It disrupts the schools. Mm-hmm. It disrupts children, families, jobs, everywhere. And so this has got to get better.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, the impact that has happened when there were flooding threats and the greater Bay Area and people in L.A. and so forth that are planning to be here for let's be honest, it's not frivolous. This is our economy. And so suddenly you get the word goes out that all over Napa, they're going to turn the power off on Wednesday, right? What's the impact going to be? Are we going to see a whole slew of cancellations and people, changing their plans? And that ripples through and it goes through every part of our economy and into the government's coffers and everything else, right?
That is something, Barry, that I had not considered. And I think you're right on, because even after the fires, you can recall, we were promoting Napa's open for business. It's tragic what happened here to our community and everything, but we're open for business. And so much of our the areas that are really have a big threat, like we have almost 150,000 people in Napa County, about 140 mm-hmm. perhaps, mm-hmm. And we're going to have 35,000 people shut down. So you can tell that's a very small, but the media doesn't, when they do these stories to the New York Times and they're syndicated out and around and people, the tourists, they're going to supposedly fly into, they can't. And I think we ought to be talking to the Napa Valley Vintners and visit Napa Valley so that we can start getting that. I think after I'm done here, I will call both of them. Directors.
Yeah, there's a messaging effort that we need to be on top of, I think, to protect ourselves, because a person who doesn't know the situation, a visitor from somewhere else, they hear this high fire danger, and they're going to turn the electricity off. I mean, what more do you need to hear to say, I'm going to go somewhere else?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a proactive thing you can do, but also I think it's important, since it's a little, maybe even late on that, not probably not too late, but what we need to understand is after the fact, what happened on the ground, and these are things that we got to be thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely. There's another angle on this, and I want to talk a couple minutes that we have left in this segment. A year ago, you were on the show and talked extensively, different times we visited, about the danger of the hedge fund people getting control of PG&E. And I've been watching this develop over the last year and thinking about what you said back then. And Cal Matters has done a lot of great reporting on this, right, over the last year. Are we paying enough attention to that? And how is that battle going to play out? Are we going to see what you were worried about turn out to be the outcome of this bankruptcy?
Well, we're not worried enough about it. But it's too late for the average consumer to be worried about it. No amount of advocacy or anything at this time is going to change what's going to happen. We have our markets. We have our bankruptcy. It's a federal bankruptcy proceeding. But let me tell you, there are no shining stars on either side. The people, they're good individuals. You know, they're good people everywhere. And even in corporate America. But nevertheless, the history and reputation of some of these characters that are in on the board and shareholders of PG&E and also the hedge funds. I can't tell you which I like better. And that's a sad, sad commentary. I think the fact that they're, I don't know. I kind of feel like at the end, PG&E wanted the legislature to run a bill. They came to me and asked me to run it, and I just said, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And it would really pave the way for PG&E to be, have an advantage in the bankruptcy proceedings, because the state would, in essence, allow them to have tax-free bonds to be able to cover, the debts of the fire victims and all their debtors. And at the end of the day, I could not see how ratepayers wouldn't have gotten clobbered. And I know a lot of people thought that 901 was a utility bailout, and we heard all about that. But the legislature has been really looking at that. Every bill that comes before us, what's it going to do to ratepayers? Now, we got to remember, because there's a lot of people say, it should be a public system. It should be owned by the government, and the government should do it. Well, I'm one that looks at the government-run healthcare that we have today. I'm one that looking at a lot of things that the government runs. And while some are very, very good, there are a lot that are not. And this is a very complicated issue. L.A. Department of Water and Power is so big that they can do it. SMUD up in Sacramento is a really good outfit. But guess what? They are scared to death. They all have power lines that are going through these watersheds. And if there's an event there, their ratepayers pay 100% of it. There's no shareholders.
Right.
So what we hope that we are accomplishing in our bills that we're passing right now that impact PG&E is, one, to the best extent that will be rate neutral as possible. The reality is, whatever happens, we have to have a utility capable fiscally of doing the job. And remember, that, and that's another thing, if we're saddling them with so much debt and so many expenses and everything, they can't afford to fully pay off the victims. And then on top of that, they're not able to fully finance their trimming of the trees. What have we accomplished?
Mm-hmm. Good point. And no answer to that one right now. In studio with us this morning, State Senator Bill Dodd. We've been talking mainly about the wildfire dangers, the public safety power cutoffs, and PG&E's bankruptcy and other related issues. As you mentioned, a bunch of bills got signed last week, four of yours that just had to do with wildfire safety, but a lot of other stuff, too, you've been working on. What would you say are your major non-fire and PG&E topics?
Well, one of the things that I've been looking at, I was in the water business before I got into politics, and one of the things, and it certainly wasn't municipal water or anything, but when you're in that business, you're interested in, you know, how it all works. And, you know, one of the things that I learned there, and I've learned it just in every walk of life, you know, we can talk about a lot of things, but if you don't measure really what the real results are out in the real world, you really don't have the answers, and you can't measure what you can't see. And I had seen that throughout the state of California, which we have huge, you know, obviously water issues. You hear even there's a divide where our state Senate Pro Tem, Toni Atkins, got her SB1 vetoed by Governor Newsom. And even in the Democratic Party, there's a divide there. Newsom sided U.S. Senator Feinstein and, you know, U.S. Senator Harris and the rest of the most of the Democrats, I would say, in Sacramento, were on the other side. And the reality is, we have stopped. There was a partnership between the federal government and the state government that we would have water measurement devices on these stream gauges, what they're called, on all the streams and rivers and everything that measure the flow. And this is good not only from a water standpoint later in the year, but even during, as the rains come and everything, you can really understand where the flood risks are too. So it's really, with all the different systems of water that we have in the state of California, it's imperative on a flood control basis and then on a water management basis. And we have systematically let them all go. We've let them all go. And I got an appropriation, you know, last year for this. I ran this bill last year and it got held in appropriations. But knowing this was coming up, we worked on it appropriations through another vehicle we were able to get. You know, we think that the whole upgrading all the stream gauges and everything is not a big deal. It's probably, you know, $5 to $7 million. We've been able to get a couple million dollars in it. We'll be working that, you know, through the budget system this next time, and then to be able to, you know, operate those so that we have that real-time data. So I was very, very pleased that we were able to get that bipartisan vote in the Senate, bipartisan vote in the Assembly, and the governor, you know, put his signature on it. And it's something that I think we can see some long-standing, you know, positive benefits from that. You know, what we've been able to do, I think some of the things that I've been working on is tuition-free community college. People all, you know, you hear the Bernie Sanders and others saying we need free college everywhere. You know, let me just say, if somebody said to me, and I'm a kid, do you think we should have free college at UC Berkeley and Cal State Sonoma? Absolutely. Sure. Frankly, I'm not real hopeful that's going to happen in the long run, because this state has disinvested in its university systems over the last 20 years. And we know what's happened. We talk about affordable housing. Well, the cost of education have gone up. The cost of tuition has gone up. And so, you know, we'll keep trying to hold the line on tuition increases. And we've done a good job since I've been there in 5 years, not increasing it, increasing the number of in-state students as opposed to out-of-state, which, you know, out-of-state pays you a lot more money, but we feel like our kids are paying for this, so our kids' parents. Another thing we've been able to do is continue. I was pretty pleased that Governor Newsom continued on the, you know, the rainy day fund, paying down debt in this budget, so our surplus is up, because we know we can kind of read the tea leaves right now a little bit on where the economy's going. I think it will go down at some point, but the economic experts do not really suggest it's going to be anything like the, you know, the last time around. But having this surplus, rainy day fund, it's not just a surplus, it is dedicated for when we have these type of events, so we don't have to go to the Napa Valley Unified School District and say, hey, I'm sorry, your budget's cut 30%. Lord knows they have budget issues right now, and that would just be untenable. Or how they fund frail elderly, or the state hospitals, or the vets home, any of these number of these things. So in our roads and streets, people are just gonna be seeing a big difference, particularly in Napa County, because the local tax we have, plus SB1 that was passed by the voters. And another thing, the governor went in on a 5-year program for pre-K expansion. and this is just 1 year. And he said, you can't have this over 1 year. And so he's made a real commit that we're going to really do this and do it well over the next 4 to 5 years. And we got to look at that. This is the next generation of our workforce. And we all know that if those kids, by the time they get to kindergarten, are not prepared, it has a devastating effect, not only on those kids, but also all the test scores, you know, of everybody else. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about what we've been able to do. We've also been able to stop bills or amend bills that aren't good bills to make them better. Not every Democratic idea is the best idea. And it's, you know, we have a group of more moderate Democrats that look at these things and their implications. We're very, very concerned about the state overcommitting, and then we have this economy, and even with this rainy day fund, we're not able to do the job. So in essence, sometimes we frustrate some of our colleagues by doing that, but in the end, I think that's what we're elected to do, and to make, you know, to make sure that the state becomes, first of all, I think we've done a lot of amazing things, but it's got to be sustainable.
Yeah. Let's talk about housing a little bit. First up, the representatives of the county, of which you were one not that many years ago, anticipating when the new RENA numbers come out, the housing allocation, that it's going to be a very big number for Napa County. People have worked over the years to keep that from happening and to minimize those numbers, and the Napa is different and that whole story. And Governor Newsom has given every indication that he's not going to listen to that anymore, and that everybody's going to have to allot for more housing because of this crisis that we're in. What do you anticipate around that, first of all? And will there be any relief from the governor's office, from the state, for Napa County if that's a really big number that seems unmanageable?
I don't think so. I don't think there's going to be any relief. We were able, when I was on the Board of Supervisors, we were able to get a lot of relief. We did Napa Pipe. You know, look, there are people that disagree with me out there, but I think I was the only one on the city, either the County Board of Supervisors or the city of Napa, that was supportive of Napa Pipe from the very beginning to the very end and never changed my mind, because I saw this happening. I saw them getting sick and tired of special Napa. And this is not me talking. This is HCD, the Housing Community Development of the state of California. Before I got there, I saw us being involved in two major lawsuits that cost the county over $4 million. We don't have those kind of millions of dollars to fight every time there's a new housing element and we're not in compliance. We have always tried to, before Napa Pipe left Napa County, we would do a patchwork of little places in Circle Oaks and, you know, here where there's no services, you know, no grocery stores. And in an era of climate change, those things are never going to get looked at anyway, because what if somebody wants to get, you know, need some food for their kids or something, or medicine, they're going to, you know, drive 20, you know, what is that? I don't, maybe even 30 minutes now with the traffic and everything down to Knob Hill to get, you know, whatever in the heck it is they need. So it's a new paradigm. It's a new day. Napa Pipe, and even though I think at 950 units or whatever it is, it should have been 2,800 units. And that would have been the bank of Napa County for housing. And we would have never had a problem.
To have that zoned and then be able to phase in construction.
But let's not complain and let the perfect be the enemy of good. And I think the city of Napa came to the table, albeit late. But look, again, let's not complain about that. They came to the table and earnestly negotiated with the county, and we came up with this, what we've got there right now. And I've got this bill now in front of, we've been lobbying the governor all weekend, you know, yesterday, and SB 235, which will allow that to go. If the governor does not sign SB 235, we've got big problems, big problems. We're back to the table negotiating.
235 is the transfer. It's the speed up process.
Let me see if I can just make this simple because it's a technical thing. It's 850 acres at Napa Pipe. So when we first worked this thing out, 425 acres are mostly, you know, Costco, business related, hotel, those type of things. 425 was for housing. And what they did to show good faith is immediately annexed the 425 acres for Costco, you know, and the other businesses into the city of Napa. Mm-hmm. The 425 that was left over still in the county, we're going to develop house. I mean, yeah, develop the housing, get the building permits assigned, and then transfer it over to the city of Napa so the county could get their housing requirements. Mm-hmm. So it turns out because of infrastructure issues, once they, you know, looked you know, deeper into it, the cost for the housing was going to be significantly more if it was on the property that was still in the county,
right?
And they needed to move it to the property that was in the city. Well, if that had happened, the city would have gotten all the credit. Mm-hmm. Napa County wouldn't have gotten any, and all this would be for naught. And that would, you know, we have an opportunity to start construction out there next, I think it's July. This doesn't get the governor's signature. It could be way out in the future. Who knows how these things work?
But what's in the bill doesn't really change any of those numbers. It just allows the location to be swapped.
Exactly.
And within the same property.
I ran this through both housing committees in the Senate and the Assembly. My colleague, Senator Wiener from San Francisco, and my former colleague in the Assembly, David Chu from San Francisco. And, you know, they're all paranoid because they don't want it to have a precedent of helping cities and counties circumvent the law. And I'll tell you what, Napa, the city and the county have been so wonderful. We've had the staff and the mayor, vice mayor, and supervisors come up and we sit down with them. No, this isn't what this is about. Mm-hmm. You should want, if this happened to any other city and county, anywhere in the state of California, you should want to cooperate. This is a perfect example of our city council and our board of supervisors working together to get things done for their constituents. And I really take my hat off to both the council and the board.
A lot of people now, there's a conversation around surplus lands, and everyone's looking to see where could some more housing go. A couple of state-owned properties are in that mix. One of them is Skyline Park. The other one is Napa State Hospital, and there's movement around Skyline Park and finally getting that into county control, right? But what about the state hospital? You look at that property, and it seems like a lot of unused, undeveloped land out there.
Well, because it's a mental institution and the NAICS security issues around there, they're not really excited yet. I don't think that's part of the low-hanging fruit of their land. Mayor Dunbar in Yountville has done a wonderful job of cooperating and working with us and working with the state with the vets home to provide affordable housing there. I think that's probably low-hanging fruit, and I really tip my hat to John. He's done a wonderful job. Let's talk about Skyline Park, because that's getting a lot of, you know, I've got Supervisor Ryan Gregory, who's a big proponent of Skyline Park, you know, unreasonably calling me morning, noon, and night. I'm just teasing. But, no, Ryan's a good friend, and, you know, he does care, obviously, and he sees the need for that to, you know, that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, we tried to buy Skyline Park when I was on the board. We got authorization. I think it was then Senator from Sonoma County. Well, you know, how quickly we forget.
Right.
But at any rate, that's what they say about me. Hey, what's his name?
What's his name?
Yeah.
That guy?
So at any rate, she got that for us. We negotiated. It was a big number, and we just weren't able to get it done. So that had nothing to do with this housing. What we want to do is we want to buy that in the county or for the Parks and Open Space District so that we can control that and keep it in Parks and Open Space. It's a logical thing. It's close to where a lot of people live. as opposed to a lot of these other open space places in Napa. It's really used. It's a great asset to our community. So that was one, and that passed, and the governor signed that bill. Now comes Governor Newsom's big housing thing. He is putting the pedal to the metal, like with City of Huntington Beach refusing to give them state monies because they're not doing their housing. He wants to be seen as somebody that not only believes what he's doing, but puts his money where his mouth is. And so he asked the Department of General Services to get an inventory of all the land available for housing that's state surplus property. And 20 acres was identified, I believe it was 20 acres, in Skyline Park. And 20 acres of Skyline Park is not a lot compared to what all the acreage in Skyline Park, but it's also symbolic. Come on, it's a park, it's like all the things that I just said. One of the things I want to try to do is to assuage people's concerns. This is not a crisis point today. Don't spend a lot of time lobbying on this thing because there's 10 years left in the lease. And I've got my staff looking at the lease and going to the legislative council. I don't think that they can do anything there proactively without the county going along with it because of that lease. So that would be something that's going to come later on down the line. However, the county can enter into negotiations with DGS and look at, it may not be 20 acres, but what if it were 10 and we could use that 10 acres to, let's compromise. Now, instead of paying market value for the property, for the park property, maybe we can get a way better than market rate deal. And there's precedent for that over in Sonoma County. So we're on it. The county's on it. The board of supervisors are on it. I've been in contact with them all.
Mm-hmm. All right. Certainly one everybody will be closely watching. We've used up all the time available for today. It's been a pleasure. State Senator Bill Dodd in here talking about a lot of current topics and things we need to be paying attention to. Thanks for your time.
Hey, it's always great to be here, Barry.